Coming up on this week's book show, Sharon Olds is renowned for poetry that examines marriage, motherhood, intimacy, and the human condition. She's the author of 15 books of poetry and received both the Pulitzer Prize and England's T.S. Eliot Prize. Her new collection, Arias, explores political conscience, race, and class in poems delivered with operatic passion, anguish, and solo force. Sharon Olds on this week's book show. Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Sharon Olds is renowned for poetry that examines marriage, motherhood, intimacy, and the human condition. She's the author of 15 books of poetry and received both the Pulitzer Prize and England's T.S. Eliot Prize for her 2012 collection, Stag's Leap, a poignant account of being left by her husband for another woman after 30 years of marriage. Her new collection, Arias, has already been shortlisted for the 2019 T.S. Eliot Prize. Arias explores political conscience, race, and class in poems delivered with operatic passion, anguish, and solo force. A professor at NYU, Sharon Olds co-founded the NYU Goldwater Hospital Writing Workshop for the Severely Physically Challenged and the NYU Veterans Writing Workshop for Veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan. Again, her latest collection is Arias, and it's a great pleasure and honor to welcome Sharon Olds to this week's book show.
Thank you so much, Joe. I'm happy to be here.
What a delight to have you on the program. I've been a great admirer of your work, and it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
The last book was Odes. Was it just make sense in your mind that the next would be Arias?
Well, I found that I was writing poems that were a little longer than the poems in Odes, and a little more, not operatic, but with the feeling a little more out on the surface. And I started calling some of them arias, and then that just started happening a lot. And so I thought, okay, that'll be the name of the next book.
So for those of us who may not know, and just so we're all on the same page, for you, the definition of an aria is what?
Oh, I don't know what the real definition is. And I also didn't look up the word ode when I was writing odes for fear that I would find out that I actually wasn't writing odes, which I liked thinking I was doing. And I think of an aria as, I guess, I mean, it could be a duet. It could be a solo. It's an expression of very strong feeling, and it's musical.
Do you think that any of this comes with age in the sense of the maturation of the poet?
Not in my case, I don't think. I cling to my immaturity as a badge of that I'm still trying to write those poems which I longed to write in high school and didn't know how.
So let us begin with the first poem in the collection, which is a beautiful poem called For You.
Thank you. For you. In the morning, when I'm pouring the hot milk into the coffee, I put the side of my face near the convex pitcher to watch the last round drop from the spout, and it feels like being cheek to cheek with a baby. Sometimes the orb pops back up, a ball of cream balanced on a whale's watery exhale. Then I gather the tools of my craft, the cherry sounding board tray for my lap, like the writing arm of a desk, the phone, the bird book for looking up the purple martin. I repeat them as I seek them, so as not to forget. Tray, cell phone, purple martin, tray, phone, martin, Trayvon Martin. Song was invented for you. All art was made for you. Painting, writing was yours, our youngest, our most precious, to remind us to shield you. All was yours. All that is left on earth with your body was for you.
Sharon Olds reading from Arias, the poem For You. Does that begin with you thinking about Trayvon Martin?
I think in the writing of the poem, it's just an autobiographical poem. It was a surprise to me. And the fact that it then involves daily life, ordinary things, and also involves art. What is art for? Who is it for? I felt fortunate that I had been looking for my tray and my phone and the Purple Martin book, because otherwise I wouldn't have written the poem.
And it's those things that also allow you to get to that point, though, to bring up and to invoke the name of Trayvon Martin.
Right. The safety of my daily life of making coffee in the morning and then looking for the tools of my craft that I am so privileged to practice.
The tools of your craft, I know you have a notebook, a ring-bound notebook that often you will write. And from what I have seen, and because I have seen you speak, that you will often read from that, and it seems that those poems are pretty much ready to go. I mean, sometimes they'll have a scratch out and a word replaced, but where do they go from there, in the sense in your mind of the crafting, the editing, the rewriting?
Well, I read a brand new poem at a reading as a way of giving something to the audience that no one else has received. And it often has some relation to the town or the city where I am. And it has mistakes in it that I discover when I'm reading them. It has its flaws of being a first draft. So with most of the poems, they have more testing than that. I will read them at a couple of places, and I only read sort of the cream off the top of what gets into my notebooks, which I write in. I write so many bad poems. That's part of my craft.
To you, what qualifies a bad poem?
Oh, in my case, self-pity, too many adjectives, just not getting to a place that sort of matters to me and therefore might matter to a reader.
In just, I know you from reading you, but you seem far from self-pity.
Well, I've worked hard at getting to the other side of that. I think it's an aspect of being human.
Sure.
And it's a challenge, probably. Do we have enough compassion for ourselves? Most of us don't. But do we sometimes have self-pity instead? Yeah, most of us do.
You will also present things that perhaps would bring about, I don't know, you would think of not as self-pity, but that you present it as fact. This is what happened. You can start a poem about your mother beating you. That is what happened to you. That is a real thing.
But I'm much more comfortable with describing the poem as a poem in which the speaker's mother is beating her. This is not to declare that my poems are not autobiographical, but I'm a teacher of creative writing workshops, poetry workshops, and I find it's not helpful if around the table we're saying to the poet, which we would be certainly tempted to do, and it might be accurate half the time or not, to always believe that the I is the poet. you know, it's pretty obvious in my case, but I'm more comfortable using that artistic trope of saying the speaker's mother. Indeed, the I of my poems might just jump right in talking about violence in families. Yeah.
The same as in your last book of talking about the dissolving of your marriage.
Right, right. It certainly seemed like an autobiographical book. But again, I want to protect my students and all the poets who want to be able to talk about their work as art rather than confession or autobiography.
Do you want to protect yourself?
Myself? What from?
Are you ever worried that you tell too much about yourself?
No. Not about myself. There are moral issues with how much one uses of others' lives in one's own art. Those are important issues, and I think about them a lot. But, no, I don't.
Sharon Olds is our guest. The name of the new book is Arias. Politics has always been somewhat part of your work.
Yes, and when I had the great honor of being inducted as Poet Laureate of New York State, and the governor then was, am I right, Pataki?
Governor Pataki. Yeah.
So I found a poem by someone from his native land, somewhere in Central Europe, where his ancestors had come from, and it was a poem against war. So I read it at my induction, honoring his ancestors and honoring my beliefs at the same time.
And has that been a voice that you have always had, or is that a voice that you have honed over time?
I think both are true. I've always wanted to speak out about the world. I saw my first demonstration in front of a building when I was 14. It was a secondary boycott for the lunchrooms at Woolworths in the South. And when I asked what it was and asked if I could have permission to join, and they just welcomed me in, then I saw that one could walk for one's beliefs. And it was tremendously thrilling and moving. Many of the poems that I write about the world just don't work. They aren't good enough art to send out into the world. I find it hard to write up to, say, my own standards, as it were, about a subject that might seem more distant from my own experience.
Do you think that poetry, in your case, and we can take this for you and in general, that it works as a way of activism?
Oh, yes. I think talk is action. Yes.
And your art form can be a way of action.
Oh, yes. I think we have needed to have human artists ever since our species came about. It's unbearable, I think, without us having access to art, either by making it and or going to it for knowledge about what it is to be a creature that knows it will die.
Does this time that we're living in, you were talking about as coping, that you find yourself in a place where you're even writing more that you need to and to think and to write in a different way, perhaps, as a response to what is happening?
Well, over the last 20 years, I've gotten a little less dumb as a poet about being privileged, being white, being, you know, having an easy life in some ways. So my work has been reflecting that for maybe 20 years. But again, I still write a whole lot of poems that don't work. And one thing that is happening is that I'm seeing the next generations of poets being much smarter than most of my generation, including myself, much smarter, much younger, about the trouble the world is in, the trouble the earth is in.
Well, and I was going to get to the earth, because that is such a theme of what you write about. You write very much about our natural world and the perils of the natural world. Do you, given that you live in New York City and have for a very long time, do you like to immerse yourself in that natural world to either when writing or to enhance that relationship?
Well, yes, I just got to come up the Hudson River and I saw a couple of bald eagles and I saw cormorants and yes, and I saw trees and I saw the level of the river and I thought about the Hudson as the waters of the earth rise. Yes, I dearly love to be in the woods and then also I dearly love to be in the city, which is an environment made to protect people.
Mm. And how does it protect you, do you think?
Well, I get to look from my window at all kinds of different people in my neighborhood. And on the subway, I get to sit with my neighbors when we're zooming through the underground. And I get to teach at a school like NYU, which attracts so many young writers because it's in New York City.
I'm hoping that you will read another poem that is in this collection. This one is called Meeting a Stranger. You just spoke of strangers.
Yes. When I was a kid, I didn't know if the families inside the single family houses around me, if those families were kind or happy or what. But I somehow had this feeling that strangers that I passed on Shattuck Avenue in Berkeley, California, they looked kind of nice to me. Meeting a stranger. When I meet you, it's not just the two of us meeting. Your mother is there, and your father is there, and my mother and father. And our people, back from our folks, back, are there, and what they might have had to do with each other. If one of yours and one of mine had met, what might have happened is there in the room with us. They are shadowy compared to us. They are quivers of reflected light on a wall. And if I were a German and you a Jew, or I a Jew and you a Palestinian, or as this morning, when you are an African-American woman and I am a WASP, one of your family might have been taken from their home and brought through murder to murder by one of my family. It is there in the air with us. And if you're a woman in the city where you live, and I am staying at the hotel where you work, and if you have brought me my breakfast on a tray, though you and I have not met before, we are breathing in our lineages together, and whether there is guilt in the room or not, or blame, there is the history of human evil and the shame in me that someone I could be related to could have committed against someone you are related to some horror. And in the room, there is a question alive. Would I have risked harm to try to protect you, as I hope I would risk it for a cousin, a niece? Or would I have stood aside in the ordinary cowardice and self-interest of my flesh, now sharing your breath, your flesh, my breath?
Meeting a Stranger, Sharon Olds, reading from the new collection, Arias, published by Knopf. You seem, and this struck me, I think, from the very first time I saw you, and that was the joy you seem to have. You do exude joy.
That's so nice, Joe. I think I was blessed with being born happy. Yeah, I think I was lucky. And then my sense impressions, what I see, hear, taste, touch, are so pleasurable to me. And then I had experiences that were not so pleasurable. And luckily, I was able to incorporate them into what they are, parts of an ordinary enough life.
Just in that last poem that you talk about, there is guilt, and whether there is guilt in the room or not, or blame, there is the history of human evil. You certainly mention that, but then you also talk about just the beauty of the fact that you're with someone that perhaps you've never met before, and you're breathing the same air, and that's a joy even within that backdrop of evil.
Yes, and she was probably young enough to be my daughter, and she was kind. She was a good person, not, as we used to say, not raised by wolves, as some of us felt we were. And I was grateful. And we're Americans together. We're related.
This goes back to an earlier question about the idea of what you share in a poem. But I'm curious about time that has passed and when is the right time for you to write about something. So in this collection, you write about a miscarriage. Do you need time to reflect on that to have that poem be what you want it to be?
As I remember, is it called something like "To Our Miscarried One, Age 50 Now"?
Yes.
And in
it's almost an anniversary, if you will.
Exactly. And in Stag's Leap, there's a poem, "To Our Miscarried One, Age 30 Now."
Right.
And in a few books before that, there's a poem called "The Miscarriage." It's not as if I know things that I think would be useful for people to know. It's that I want to sing about ordinary life. And those poems are different from each other. They're definitely different. So I figure there's enough room for those three separate views over time of that event, because our views of our lives change as we get older. Some things don't, but we have something new to say to someone we might have known or not known decades ago.
You just used the word sing. Do you think, as you're writing and even reading of it as a song, as you're singing, that there's a musicality?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. Someone called it the level music of poetry. The level music. Yes, very different. I mean, music, good heavens, all those notes. I love that so much. But it's music without the same kind of melody and harmony. And I'm super interested in consonants and also in vowels and also in internal rhyme. And I scan poems a lot, not my own, not while I'm writing, but other people's, in order to appreciate what their habits of rhythm are. And I love to dance. So yes, music and dance and poetry feel to me very closely related.
Seem very primal as well.
Yes, yes.
I'm hoping in the few moments that we have left that you can read a final poem for us. There is a poem in the collection called "No Makeup," and it appears early in the collection and is quite beautiful.
Thank you. No makeup. Maybe one reason I do not wear makeup is to scare people. If they're close enough, they can see something is different with me, something unnerving, as if I have no features. I am embryonic, pre-eyebrows, pre-eyelids, pre-mouth. I am like a water bear talking to them, or an amniotic traveler, a vitreous floater on their own eyeball, human ectoplasm risen on its hind legs to discourse with them. And such a white, white girl, such a sickly toadstool, so pale, a visage of fog, a fizz of mist above a graveyard, no magenta roses, no floral tribute, no goddess, no grown-up woman, no acknowledgement of the drama of secondary sexual characteristics, just the gray matter of spirit talking, the thin features of a gray girl in a gray graveyard, granite, ash, chalk, dust. I tried the paint, but I could feel it on my skin. I could hardly move under the mask of my desire to be seen as attractive in the female way of 1957, and I could not speak. And when the makeup came off, I felt actual as a small mammal in the woods with a speaking countenance, or a basic primate having all the expressions which evolved in us to communicate. If my teenage acne had left scars, if my skin were rough instead of soft, I probably couldn't afford to hate makeup or to fear so much the beauty salon or the very idea of beautyship. And my mother was beautiful. Did I say this? In my small eyes and my smooth, withered skin, you can see my heart. You can read my naked lips.
Sharon Olds reading the poem No Makeup in the new collection, Arias. That line, which stayed with me and still stays with me, is a vitreous floater on their own eyeball. I feel like that all the time.
Oh, yeah.
That's such a wonderful way to explain so many of us, I think, of how we are about in the world.
Right. I find that I like to feel invisible-ish, just so I'm not being judged as a person in relation to my appearance, which can stop me from speaking. So I don't feel very visible right now, Joe. I can see you, and it's a very pleasant sight, but I'm not shy because of my being visible. I feel like a voice talking out of an acceptable enough old lady mask.
That's one of the things I love about radio, though, because it's just the voice.
I love radio. I grew up on it. I listened so gratefully when I was a kid to radio.
Well, to have your voice come out of this show and this radio station is such an honor for me. The name of the new book is Arias. It's by Sharon Olds. The book is absolutely beautiful, and what a great pleasure and honor to have you before our microphones.
Thank you, Joe. What a pleasure and honor for me as well. Thank you so much.
Sharon Olds is the author of the new collection, Arias. It is published by Knopf. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows, and you can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.